It's Friday night. The sun has gone down and the darkness is about to creep in. Say a prayer and hold on tight. You're listening to Signs of the Dead, Paranormal Radio, on the People's Paranormal Radio Network.
My sincere apologies for that little audio hiccup that just happened now. I don't know what the heck that was, but that almost made me shout a four-letter expletive live on the air. I thought I had everything on this computer fixed, but I guess not. Firefox is working just fine now. All the players are working, and somehow, some way, things get little hiccups in them, and it makes the show sound not so good. I am so sorry about that, guys. But hey, thank you guys so much for being here. It is Friday night once again. I am your host, Stephen Despain. This is Signs of the Dead Paranormal Radio, just as the spooky voice had led you to believe. You could be watching Ghost Adventures, but right now, you're listening to me. So thank you very much. This really should be an interesting show. Those of you guys that were listening to this show back in February, you remember a team that was on here called Indie Para. Well, Donna, one of the founders of that particular group, is going to be on the show tonight discussing her book, The Lee Avenue Haunting. That should be really interesting. It's not like your other ghost books, I guess you could say, because this isn't just a collection of stories. This isn't really just a collection of ghost hunting experiences. This is actual personal encounters, stuff that occurred to her and her family, things that they were experiencing before she even got into the field of paranormal research. So that should be really interesting. I've been looking at the reviews on it on Amazon. A lot of people seem to be really into this book. I really am looking forward to discussing with her and seeing what it's all about. If I start coughing again, I've been saying this for weeks now. I am so sorry, but I have a summer cold, and today it was hot, it was humid. I have got a sore throat again, and I have been coughing like nobody's business. So if you hear a really long pause, it's because I'm being polite and respectful, and I'm turning away from the microphone so I don't cough directly into it. It's still going to be loud. I apologize. You know, it kind of reminded me of something I saw on a rerun of Frasier the other night where he was sick and he kept coughing on the air. So it kind of brought a tear to my eye because I thought, hey, look at this guy, Kelsey Grammer's character, a professional radio host, all sick and coughing live on the air. That's just like what I do, except I'm not a professional. So, you know, I think before we get our fantastic guest on, I really hope I can get a hold of her. I hope that Skype does not give me any major issues tonight. I think I might just play a song, but because I like to and not really because I have to. Oh, what do I want to hear? Oh, let's see here. Ooh. You know, it's not Halloween right now. We're still a few months away, but I'm going to play a Halloween song.
Trick or treat, smell my feet, give me something good to eat.
Bonfires burning bright, pumpkin faces in the night. I remember harrowed dead cats hanging from bones, little dead owl out in groves. We'll be right back.
Halloween by Mr. Bones and the Boneyard Circus, a fantastic song coming to you all the way from the Philippines of all places. Just to answer any of this, you know, these questions that are popping up in your mind right about now, no, not all music from the Philippines sounds like that. In fact, this is one of the only bands that sounds like that, thus being why I find them so darn interesting. Go to their website, www.boneyardcircus.com. Download that particular track. Share it with your friends. Tell them how much you love it. And do yourself a real favor. Fly to the Philippines to see them live. Please. You owe it to yourself. And without further ado, guys, I am going to call Donna and get her on the horn here so we can discuss this book. Donna.
Yes.
Hi, welcome back to the show.
Thank you for having me. How are you today?
Suffering from a little bit of a cold yet, but other than that, not too bad.
Oh no, that's the worst in the summer.
Yes, I was just saying that on the air before.
Oh.
It has been, I think the last time we had you on the show was, I believe, February, so it's been a while.
Wow, yeah, it feels like yesterday.
Yeah, I know, it's amazing how quickly this year is going by.
It is. I'm getting older.
Ah, yeah, I know that feeling. So now your reason for being on the show tonight is to discuss this book of yours, The Lee Avenue Haunting.
Yes, that's correct. I'm very excited about it.
Now, I was just explaining to everybody before that this is actually quite different from other books that people have discussed on the show, because typically when people want to talk about books that they've written, it usually goes from very much the point at which they started investigating the paranormal. This book of yours is actually real life accounts of things that occurred to you long before you started ghost hunting.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. It's actually one of the major reasons why I started investigating and started, embracing the unknown rather than running from it in the middle of the night screaming like a little girl.
Now this book is really recent. I mean, this literally just came out not that long ago.
Right, about it came out on June 20th, in fact.
So I mean, obviously where you're at right now, you've got your team Indie Para. You've been doing that for a while.
Mm-hmm.
Did that really help fuel this book for you to help you want to get these stories out and share these with the public?
It did, because I kept thinking about it, and I would share them amongst friends over dinner and through the years, and people would be like, really? Wow, you know, you should write about it one day. And I said, yeah, you know, I guess I will, you know, one day. And, you know, what was I going to wait for until I was dead or, you know, in the nursing home where I can't remember anything anymore? And so I just sat down and said, I'm just going to do it, just absolutely do it. And I had a couple of friends who really cheered me on and encouraged me to actually just, you know, they handed me the pen, the book, and said, just do it already, you know, get it over with, rip it off like a Band-Aid. I'm pretty grateful for that happening, because I was able to actually share my encounters with everyone, and I'm at the point that I don't really care too much what people are thinking, you know, whether they believe, it's a personal choice, and if they don't, that's fine, too. Everyone has a right to their beliefs or disbeliefs in the paranormal.
And when we had you on last time, you guys had some EVPs for us, and that stuff was really fantastic, you know, and I appreciate that you share those with us and with the listening audience. But this really goes to the core of what we look for as far as researching the unknown. These are these first-hand accounts. This is stuff that you don't have direct documentation of. This is stuff that you've strictly experienced for yourself and that you and your family have gone through.
Right, exactly.
Now,
you know, back in 1974, a lot of people would be like, well, did you capture it on video? Did you get an EVP of it? You know, back then, who really did that, you know? I mean, it was the pioneers who actually knew about doing stuff like that, not a six-year-old in 1974. So, unfortunately, I don't have any evidence I can share with anyone, just the memories, the stories of my memories. But, yeah, so evidence, I don't have physical evidence I can produce, but...
How long were you working on this book? From the time you said, I'm going to do this, I'm going to put pen to paper, I'm going to write this down, I'm going to share these experiences, and to the time you got out, how much time are we talking here?
I would say it took me about a year, and that's not like a full constant year. It was basically, every couple of nights out of a week, I would sit down and, after everything was done and everyone was fed and all the bills were paid, and I'd go off in a room and just write and just, go into my memory and just bring myself back into the 1970s and just say, okay, I'm going to remember all of this and just put it out into words that would make any sense and that people would want to care to read or listen to. So I would say about a year of, on and off, at least 1 or 2 days out of the week for a year.
Okay. Before we start discussing any of these firsthand accounts that you had, let me ask you this, and I have to ask.
Sure.
Writing this stuff down, was it at all painful trying to relive these things, in your mind as you're writing them down? Was it hard to kind of experience that stuff when, sort of reopen those old events in your mind when you're writing about it?
Not really. I mean, if I didn't get into investigating, I'd probably say yes, I was terrified, it was exhausting, it was emotional. But because I started investigating, I look at it from such a different point of view that for me it was therapeutic to actually write down and to relive these occurrences. And it was actually kind of, without trying to sound too bizarre, kind of like visiting old friends. I was very happy to do it. I was actually in a very good mood to do it. Probably not the answer you were expecting.
No, I had to ask because I'm always curious whenever people are talking about these personal experiences, because for everybody it's going to be different how it's going to affect them.
Sure.
And in my dealings with some people, when they talk about things that happened to them when they were younger, sometimes they can get a little bit emotional and they would rather just forget about it, or they'd rather not talk about it at length. And other people are okay with it.
But yeah, I was absolutely fine with it because, like I said, it was the reason that left me scratching my head saying, well, there's something to this, and there's something that exists after we leave this planet, our physical bodies. And there's another, universe or parallel universe or another dimension or whatever, you feel comfortable with saying that does exist. And there's different levels of spirits and, it's funny, some shows, there's one particular show, everything's a demon, and I don't think everything's a demon, but I do believe that there was a demonic presence in that home to cause some of those things. So in it of itself, that probably would be terrifying, but you just have to face it on, and you just have to respect it, and you just have to research the whole thing. And that's why I keep scratching right off the top till I just get the answer. And the answer may never come, but I'll just keep doing it till the day I die.
All right. Now, opening this book, when someone first cracks this open and they first get into the first few pages of it, what can readers expect from this?
They will read some background history of when the house was first built. They will look into a family in the early 1970s that it's going to be quite different, because at the time that these things happened, you have to remember we had black and white TVs, and we had one color TV, and there were no iPads, no iPods, no cell phones, there was no cable TV. There was just 13 channels. Life was so much more simple. So I take you into the world of, people are like, oh, my God, it's almost like cave people. are you kidding? Oh, my God, a time that, family actually sits together and eats and has conversations with one another. Very different. I don't want to say like happy days,
right.
We weren't that perfect, Cleaver family, but things were so much more different. And I think that those will be the first few pages that people get a glimpse into how I grew up, and painting a picture of how the house was built and the background story of the people who actually owned the home versus the people who rented the home. And you kind of see the relationship between my family and a very short time that we met the prior residents that were, we were kind of like passing them the night. We met them, you know, on the lease signing, and we kind of got a little quick synopsis into their world and noticed that they were kind of covering things up in retrospect when you look back. It's like certain looks and certain things that they said to each other at that meeting that maybe if we had known what was going on, would we actually really move into that apartment at that time? Probably not.
And this wasn't stuff that happened just, you know, 1 week out of the year. This wasn't something that happened once or twice and it was done for. This actually went on for a really long time, these experiences.
Yes, it went on for 5 years. And because in those days, back in the 1600s, no, back in the back in those days, they gave you a five-year lease. There were no, like, 9 months, 12 months, 2 year, 1 year leases. They actually was sat down and said, okay, you'll have a five-year lease. And, you know, my father, unfortunately, he fell extremely ill, and we had to go on to, like, Social Security disability, and it was really hard. My mom was a stay-at-home mom, and she took care of us. So we really didn't have the resources to pack up and just move. If we did, I think we would have in a heartbeat. And we tried to ignore it on several occasions. We try to will it away with prayers, and it just got worse. Things just kept getting heavier and stronger, and it was quite a tornado living there for 5 years and all of this going on.
What was the first thing you remember experiencing that made you stop and go, something is definitely not right here?
Well, one of the major things that really freaked me out, and I think, if anything, even being an investigator of today, because it's something that even today I have not come across since I was a child, was actual, what you call it, lookalikes of your family. They call them doppelgangers. This thing would kind of make itself look like my family members. And you would think your family member would walk into a room and, you know, be smiling at you, and, you know, you're trying to talk to this person and communicate with this person, and they're just kind of looking at you, and you know something's a little off. They're like smiling at you, and then you realize that they walk through a wall instead of through a doorway, and then you just feel like you crap your pants at that point. So I think that was one of the more resounding things that happened to me, experiencing, was actually noticing this thing putting itself into the form of my family members.
How many times did that happen?
It happened with my sister and my father, and it happened once with my sister and several times with my dad, and it was just the weirdest experience I can even describe, and I would scream and call out for my mother, and she'd come, and I'd explain to her what I saw, and, you know, and she would say, no, it wasn't, you know, Daddy, it wasn't your sister, it wasn't, and, you know, a couple of times, people at school thought, well, maybe she's a little loose, you know, a little crazy. Maybe the teachers would write home notes to my mother, you know, to have a meeting and say, well, maybe she needs to see a therapist, you know, thinking I was crazy because I'd go to school and share these things. I was like the town crier, thinking it was completely normal, not realizing it wasn't very normal and things were not accepted. So I was told to kind of like, don't talk about things that go on at the house. You know, because they're going to put you away and just think that you're crazy. So, you know, I was kind of silenced.
The family that was living there before, from what you're saying, they had been having strange things happening there in the house as well.
Correct.
Is that the reason they moved?
You know, something I would love to actually meet up with them. I can tell you that... one of them is still at least alive, and, you know, I've been trying to get in touch with her, and I won't give away her name because it's not fair.
Right.
But I, you know, the prior family, there was a suicide. Her brother committed suicide, actually, and my sister and I were lucky enough to share a bedroom that used to be his. So they knew a lot of stuff that was going on in the home, and they kind of hinted to us because the oldest daughter kind of took me under her wing the night that we met, and my family was signing the lease. And back then, you know, they put up the coffee pot and put out the cookies, and they want to meet you, and, you know, now it's just like, here, you know, goodbye, you know, you don't meet anybody, you just sign a paper, move in, and that's it. And something actually happened the first night that we finally, there was something in her bedroom that was going to become my bedroom at first, and a lamp completely threw up the nightstand table as she was trying to teach me how to play a song on the piano. And she goes, don't worry, that always happens. And, you know, that always happens. How come that always happens? I mean, how come I didn't question it? I mean, maybe I was too young, maybe, you know, who knows? And her mother ran in, and they kind of gave each other the sign, the look of each other, like, you know, don't say anything. And, you know, my mother came in, took me out, thought I broke glass, and the whole thing was a misunderstanding. I was nowhere near the lamp. I was across the room, and this thing just flew and broke into a bunch of pieces.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it was, definitely.
So that happens right out the gate. You have something go flying, you have a lamp come flying across the room, they tell you, oh, that just happens.
Right. And that, oh, that always happens.
Oh, my.
Well, I don't know about you, but in a normal household, that just doesn't happen.
It just
happen.
Doesn't naturally always happen. Exactly.
No.
But what else were you experiencing there? I mean, the first thing that just popped up, you know, obviously being the lamp, and you said you guys kind of put that in the back of your minds for a while. What was next?
I would say when, before we moved in, and we didn't know this at first. My mother kind of confessed to us after we moved in and things started to unravel and we started to really look at each other and say, okay, something's going on here more than we know. Basically, she was getting the house together for us to move in the next day. And she was, you know, cleaning, preparing, hanging curtains, just sort of by herself. She had her coffee thermos in the kitchen and scrubbing the bathroom and going from room to room, just setting up. And she basically, as she was cleaning the bathroom, she heard a door open and she thought it was the landlord maybe coming in just to check, or, you know, maybe she thought my dad had stopped by. She was like, hello, hello, nothing, nothing. Then she heard another door close. Then she got a breeze, like a window was open, and she thought, okay, maybe it's me. You know, you always think it's you. You always think it's in your mind at first. She went into the kitchen. She proceeded to go into the kitchen to get her coffee, and her thermos was completely gone. So at that point on, it was like a running start of, okay, we're going to introduce ourselves. We live here. We control, you don't. So she kind of lost it at some point because she heard another door slam and she was out of there. So she kind of, you know, she confided into us after we moved in, and she goes, well, now I have to, you know, explain to you what happened to me. And we're like, great, you know. So we're sitting around and we would hear strange things in the middle of the night. If we were on summer vacation from school, we would hear. And we were, this is a city, this is a, you know, second largest city in New York. There was no, at that time, there was no farms. When it was first built, yes, it was farmland, but not in, in the 1970s. We'd be sitting in the kitchen, we'd hear hoofs, like I guess, like how a pig or a goat would, you know, like a hoof of an animal. We'd hear goat sounds walking up and down the foyer, where the bedrooms were, where the bathrooms were, and it completely freak us out. We're like, what the hell is going on? You know, we'd walk into the room in a hot summer night because we had no air conditioning, and it would be ice cold, like a meat locker, and smell like a farm. Like, you know, like I don't know if you've ever been on a farm, or it's like that smell of animal feces, animal urine, that kind of smell. And basically, the room was ice cold, and it smelled like feces and urine.
Oh yeah, I mean, I'm from Wisconsin. You know, we've got farms everywhere you go, and I'll just say to anybody that does, that's never been near a farm, it is an unmistakable smell.
Yeah.
Anytime you smell it, you go, yeah, there's a farm nearby, and it doesn't even have to be that nearby for you to smell it. So yeah, I know exactly what you mean.
You know the smell. I mean, and at the time that we lived there, there were just houses. It was now just populated with houses. No farms, you know. The most many people had were they were growing rose bushes on the side of their home, and that's it, you know. But there were no farms. No one had livestock. I mean, we were literally 10 minutes from New York City, so.
Do you think that that aspect of this particular haunting was some sort of residual replay that was happening?
I absolutely believe that it was a part of it. I do believe that the house was just reliving a memory over and over and over again. And we were just lucky bystanders to hear it and see it and smell it, especially smell it. You know, so that was one of the things. And we would go, this is not right. This is not normal. And with the smell, and it was disgusting. And then 10 minutes later, it would dissipate. You wouldn't smell it. You wouldn't hear anything. And, you know, it was just one of those things. So you just scratch your head and, you know, and it seemed to get worse because my mom was a Catholic. So she believed in, you know, stuff like this happens, you take out the Bible. She goes, you know, I've seen it in a movie. I know it can be done. It's like one of those things, you know. And she would go through each room and she would say the prayers and maybe things would quiet down for a day or two and then wallop, you know, would just intensify. And between things sitting down on beds, you'd be sitting in a bed and then you'd hear, like imagine yourself sitting on your bed and you hear something scuffling up to your bed on the carpet, and then they sit down and you can hear the mattress kind of sink in. You know, that kind of freaks you out. You know, you want to just jump out and run. You're afraid, you know, so you don't move because now you're paralyzed with fear. Those things used to happen to my mother quite often.
Did anybody else ever visit the house, like friends or other family members, and did they have any experiences while they were there?
My grandmother, she was European. She was born and raised in Vienna, Austria, and she came over to the States as a young woman, and she had a lot of, you know, old wives tales, European, you know, that she believed in the paranormal, and she would, you know, so she would stay. She goes, you know what, let me sleep in that room. And my mother would be like, Mama, are you crazy? You know, you don't stay in there. Don't do it. So she'd be like, no, I'll do it. And the next day we'd ask her, she's like, yep, you know, the door would open. She goes, I would see someone standing in the corner. As I felt somebody, I heard somebody clear their throat, and so it did make itself known to other people in the family. Like my brother, rest his soul, he was a very large skeptic, scientific type of mind, until we lived there, and he completely changed his whole view of how he looked at the unknown. Things would happen to him left and right. Things would just draw weird, evil, demonic faces on his desk that he would do his homework on. Things would just knock on his door. Dining room chairs used to just line up in front of his bedroom, and just to kind of get his attention, because the more he protested, the more it tried to get his attention. Like, no, I'm here. I'm very much here. So he said, all right, I'm aware. I'm aware, and I believe.
Do you feel that he was being targeted because of his skepticism? Was this thing just trying to basically say to him, yes, I'm real, I exist, I very much exist in the real world that you think of, that you live in, that you breathe in?
I would say, I mean, if I was a spirit, I mean, I have to look at it from that point of view, and someone said, no, I don't believe in you, I don't believe that you're doing this, and you're moving these things around, you're making these sounds, I would definitely punch my way into that world and try to get that attention of that person. So this way they go, you know what, all right, I'm putting my hand up, I believe in you. You know, what do you have to say now? Unfortunately, when he admitted that he believed and he understood that these things were actually going on, things continued. It's not like we acknowledged these things and they calmed down and they went away. Like, okay, you believe in us, we're leaving now. It's like the more we try to say, look, we understand you're here. We tried, you know, I tried as a friend, as a little child, to be a friend, which is the worst thing you can do. I tried to talk to it, and things got worse, because you never know. I mean, if it's friendly, if it's evil, it could pretend to be something that it's not. It could be pretend to be a child to another child. And meanwhile, it could be, you know, a full-grown adult, evil spirit waiting to hurt that child. So I did everything you're not supposed to do. And that's how I grew up, saying, well, you know, you kind of ride your bike, and you got to expect to fly off that bike and skin your knee. So,
exactly.
So to speak, yeah, so that's what I did. You know, I did enough things that were incorrect, so hopefully now as an adult I don't, you know, repeat big disasters.
Looks like Sam finally, my co-host Sam finally came online. If you don't mind, Donna, I'm going to add him to the call.
Sure.
Let's see if Sam picks up. And this is the point when you realize just how slow Skype can be. Sam, of course, everybody's out of the UK, so I'm not sure how good the internet is there tonight. Probably a bunch of people playing World of Warcraft or something. Who knows?
Or in the pub sometimes.
Hey, Sam.
Hey, sorry I couldn't make it. I was just feeling well.
No problem, Sam. All right, well, you missed some really good discussions, so shame on you.
Hello, Sam. How are you?
Hello again.
Hello. How are you there? Is it, what time is it? Around 3:30 in the morning?
Yeah.
Okay, so... Sam, I'm counting on you. Spread the word about me and my book, so I'm counting on you. You are my world to the UK.
Yeah, I'm counting on you too, Sam. All right.
So I can sound a bit like Cokie, it's just like I don't really feel that good, so.
All right. Now, back to when you discussed this at school. Now, nowadays when you hear people talk about a haunting happening in their house, I think thanks to the paranormal TV shows, the documentaries and everything, it's almost expected that somebody's going to come forward nowadays and say, yeah, this stuff happened in my house, and I'm cool telling people about it. But this was back in the 70s.
Right.
This stuff was darn taboo.
Yes.
Did
That's
this,
exactly why I wrote it, because and, it was finally had to get out there, because what people thought I was completely out of my mind for in 1974 to 1979, and then it followed me because I shared the stories for many years after that, and of course, you know, my true friends hung on, and they actually believed me, and the friends who thought I was crazy, they just kind of faded away, but, you know, that's fine. I'm okay with that.
I mean, how did that affect, you know, beyond just, you know, the friends and the people that, of course, you expect to be there for you. I mean, you're telling these stories at school. How
mm-hmm.
did people at that school as a group view you talking about these ghost stories?
I ate alone in the cafeteria, so just to, you know, after some of this happened, kids kind of, you know, I sat by myself in most of the classrooms. And, you know, there were some kids that were okay with it, that, you know, they're like, eh, you know, oh, well, her house is haunted. Okay, well, she's a little weird. I like her anyway. You know, it's like one of those things. You know, hey, you want to play after school? Okay, sure. And, you know, we'd end up on the swings at the park after school. But most part, it was, I felt alienated, and it kind of, I mean, it added a loneliness at that age. Because, you know, at that age, at any child's age, I mean, it's very important to have fulfillment of friendships and to be accepted. And when you're not quote unquote accepted into the wolf pack, you know, you kind of feel like, wow, what did I do here? You know, I was just telling the truth. I was just sharing what happened. So it's like you said, it was very much taboo. Whereas today, you know, a kid going into school and, oh yeah, 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 this demon just like flew out of my closet and ate my shoes. Oh, that's cool, you know.
Yeah, same thing happened to me last night. Yeah, awesome.
Yeah, oh wow, did you get it on videotape? Oh yeah, I put it on YouTube, by the way. You know, back in 1974, there was no YouTube. There was like, are you crazy? Are you insane? You know, and people would think that you're on drugs. So yeah, big difference, 40 years and plus going by.
Did anybody else, when you're sharing these stories, did this let anybody else open up to you as far as something they might have been experiencing? Something that was similar?
Recently, since the book came out, I've had a lot of good support. A lot of people have come to me, emailed me, because I do provide ways to contact me in the book, and I do encourage people to go forth and share their stories. and not be afraid and not hide behind anything and not, you know, do not mind what people say. If you have something that you're experiencing, absolutely share it. And people have been quite kind as of recently and very supportive, coming to me and sharing their wonderful stories. I say wonderful stories like their Christmas memories, but, you know, their stories. And it's pretty extraordinary. And I really respect them for coming forth and taking their moments out of their day to come to me and talk to me and email me and share these things. Because it takes a lot of guts and it takes a lot of strength emotionally to actually come forth and do it. It's like, you know, it's like anything else. It's like when you're, you know, for people who are in those 12-step programs, it's like that. You have to stand up and say, hi, my name is so-and-so, and I'm a, you know, I believe in ghosts. So it's very much like that. In fact, it's probably more acceptable to say, hi, I'm so-and-so, and I shoot meth, and, you know, and I'm an alcoholic, rather than I see ghosts, you know.
Now, when you say things are demonic, a lot of people have one word that comes to their mind when people say the word demonic.
Right, they think of things.
Right. Do you feel that that is what it was?
I don't know if it was Satan, but I do believe that these things did not live a healthy life, did not have a happy life. I do know that because there was multiple suicides involved and possibly murder, and you know the backdrop of the whole thing is, you know, you're not, I mean, if you follow the Catholic religion, and I don't anymore, I stopped doing that a long time ago, and that's just my personal choice. I'm more spiritual than I am religious, and you know, but the way you look at it in the Catholic religion, if you kill yourself or you are not baptized, you go to hell, or you're of, you know, you belong to the devil. So, I mean, one can look at it in a religious point of view and say such a thing. For me, I'll never know, but I think that if you hear something that's growling, or if you see something that's, you know, being flung, like I was actually pushed, like I felt like a football player had pounced into me when I was a child, and my sister actually saw it. I was standing in the kitchen, and something that would hurt a child, I mean, I believe is evil. I would believe that would be demonic. Do I have any proof that it was demonic? No. But I can't say it was a friendly ghost. It wasn't Casper, so.
So this thing actually assaulted you. It tried to harm you.
Yes, it did physically try to hurt me. And this was after I was trying to communicate with it, which I shouldn't have done. And I do mention that in the book of things not to do. And, you know, it's like you don't watch that movie about Captain Howdy and not learn a thing or two. And unfortunately, you know, that movie came out not too long after that time. And I was, of course, too young to see such a thing. But, I mean, it's pretty true to life. You know, you don't entertain those things. You don't engage. And you don't say, yeah, sure, let's have a tea party, you know, and then expect it to be completely okay, because it wants something from you, whether it be your life, your energy, it's lonely, it wants to F with you in not so many words. One never knows, you know, youth energy of a young child, you know, it's like seeing a display of Twinkies to a fat person, so.
Sam, you like Twinkies?
I'm sorry?
Sam,
you like Twinkies?
Do I like Twinkies? No, they taste like chemicals.
Sam, you like them, right?
Yes, I love them.
Yeah, hey, me too. Me too.
They have them over there? I didn't know that they had them in England.
Yeah, they recently added them.
Oh, okay.
It was like a few weeks ago they brought them in.
Yeah, no,
so.
I like the crumb cake myself, but...
Yeah, I'm sure I got like 10 boxes of them.
You bought 10 boxes of them?
Oh, no.
No, not really.
Well, you know, you got...
You might have a little
energy.
No,
not really.
Well, you gotta keep Hostess in business, you know? Somebody's got to.
Well, he's probably afraid of that nuclear war about to happen, so, you know. And they last forever, you know.
It's the zombie apocalypse food.
Yeah. Yes.
The only thing that'll
you
be left.
You never know when that zombie's going to attack, and you just need that Twinkie, so.
That's right. That's right. Now, you mentioned just a moment ago that you were raised Catholic.
Mm-hmm.
And from the way you're making it sound, and I mean, correct me if I'm wrong. And you're spiritual now, but you're not Catholic anymore.
Right.
Catholicism, while good, and I mean, I will never judge somebody for their religious beliefs, their spirituality, or what have you.
Right.
But from what I'm gathering, Catholicism didn't satisfy the answers you needed.
No. They actually turned us away. They actually turned my mom away because she actually went to the Catholic Church for help. And they actually, not so many words, told her that she needed help. Like, kind of like the school told her that I needed help, that we were kind of crazy, that these types of things don't exist, and they didn't. It was unheard of. And they asked her to kindly please leave the rectory when she was asking for help. And she was heartbroken. She was actually, you know, it never waned her belief. And she still attended that church, and she still made Christmas ornaments and cookies for all the Christmas elves that they had. And she still supported them and still donated. In spite of how they treated her. And for that, you know, I take my hat off to her. But unfortunately, I wouldn't have done the same thing. Because for whatever reason, I'm just cut from a different cloth. You know, I was ashamed of them for the way they treated her. So as years went on, when I was able to make that decision of separating my ways, my path from being a Catholic, I actually started looking into the religion of Wicca, which a lot of people make fun of, and there's movies and shows, and then, you know, it's nothing like that in real life. There's not the power of three. You know, I don't stand in an attic with, you know, ritual books with eyeballs on them or anything of that nature. There's no wizards, and I don't dress like Stevie Nicks. I don't howl at the moon. There's none of that going on. You know, I eat macaroni and cheese, and, you know, and I watch reality TV, so... So it's a far different of the books and stories that they have out there now. They glamorize it, and they try to make it sound like, good God, what the hell's going on? So that's the pathway I took. It was basically earth-based nature, a love of earth and God and goddess, and it was more of an acceptance there, and more believing that people understood that what went on spiritually. And other realms and other parallel universes, rather than the Catholic Church just saying, oh, you're crazy, get out of here, never come back here. So I wanted to go where I was accepted and loved and respected, rather than shunned. I think anybody would make that decision. I mean, maybe not, you know, but going where their spiritual of choice would be.
And yet your mom still remained a very dedicated member of this church.
Yes.
She still remained very spiritual.
Absolutely.
But was she heartbroken? Because I would be.
She was heartbroken. It was like she was, it's like going to your parents for help. And they kind of turn you away and like kind of push you in the face, you know, with the melon and kind of say, no, absolutely not. But please do, you know, follow our rules and come back here, you know. Sunday at the same bad time at the same bad channel and donate in that basket. But and she did, you know, because she believed that she was helping the church and she believed that she was honoring God in the best way that she could until the day that she died, so.
Did it get worse after that? I mean, after she asked for help?
Yeah, it did. It just, it became not only emotional because now your own church has turned their back. You know, and she tried to take matters into her own hands by saying, okay, well, I'm going to get me some holy water, and I'm going to read some prayers, and I'm going to bless this thing, and I'm going to go into every room, and I'm going to demand it to leave my children alone, and I'm going to demand it to leave us alone, and leave us in peace, and go to the light, and all that other stuff. Things got worse. I mean, I'll share a funny thing that I didn't put in the book because I didn't want to make it a comical thing, but I will share it with you. My mother's said, okay, we're going to catch this thing. And she believed if she put baby powder on the floor in the middle of the night, we would actually be able to see the footsteps of whatever it is that walked up and down our foyer. And not realizing that maybe my father might want to get up in the middle of the night to use the bathroom. And, of course, in the dark, he slipped and fell on the baby powder. So all you heard was a bunch of, you know, F-words and, you know, why the F is this on the, you know, and he's covered in baby powder, you know, and how do you look at your husband and say, well, I was trying to catch a ghost. So, yeah, we tried to experiment to try to do our early on, you know, debunking of things. And it almost broke my father's leg and covered him with baby powder. So, but yeah, I did not add that in the book because it's funny and it's true, but I just didn't want it to be a comedy.
It's playing in my head right now. Thump, 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 slip, thud. What was that? Did you hear that? Yeah, I heard that. Ah! Ah! It sounds really mad. F-bomb, F-bomb, F-bomb.
Yes.
It's really, really mad. What do you want? What do you want? Ah! My leg! My leg! Oh my God, it wants its leg.
Something like that, you know, and my mother flipped on the light, and there my father was in his boxers and, you know, in his Fruit of the Looms t-shirt, screaming and yelling, covered with baby powder, and, you know, what the F, Marge, what are you doing, you know. It was pretty funny. I wish, you know, I, being such a young kid, I wish I had, like, a camera, you know, and just take pictures of my dad rolling around in baby powder.
Let that be a warning to all of you thinking about doing the baby powder experiment. Everybody that saw it in the film Paranormal Activity.
Yes,
warn.
I had to laugh. I was like, "Oh my God, this is like a chapter out of my mother's book." When I saw them do that with the talc.
Warn your family before you do this. Tell them where it's going to be and when you're doing it. Section the area off. Whatever you got to do, just let somebody know.
Yeah, we didn't, you know, the planning was a little poor, you know, the concept was good, the reason why we were going to do it was good, but it didn't execute quite the way we had anticipated, so.
Sam, you were being awfully quiet tonight. Are you sleeping?
No.
What are you doing?
He's playing online poker, I just know it.
I don't like poker.
Oh, well, see, Sam, I'm counting on you because you're my voice to the UK. You need to spread the word about my book because it is on sale on Kindle and Amazon everywhere, everywhere. Not just people in America can purchase this book.
I'll purchase it.
Put a link on your Facebook.
Because
you've got friends on your page that I don't. I mean, I've got over 5,000 friends, but they're not all friends on your page. So you can reach some people I don't reach.
Yes, reach them for me, Sam. I'm counting
on
you.
Come on, Sam. Well, I'll of course be putting a link up on my Facebook page. User ID is Glass Ghost Hunter, kids. Two words, please. So that way you can get this spooky good book. I've been reading some of the reviews because I went to Amazon.com because one of the first things I want to do before I even hear about a book is I want to know what is everybody else thinking. I want to get sort of a litmus test of what the consensus is. People seem to be really receptive to this book.
And I'm so tickled and I'm so pleased. I just wish that I would have had the same reception 40-some-odd years ago. You know, a lot of people are like, did these things really happen? I'm like, yes, they did. They really did, you know. So, yeah, I'm really pleased with how people are taking it and reading it, and you know, and if someone is out there and they read the book and they think it absolutely sucks, poop, that's fine too. I respect that, and they're very welcome to tell me that, you know what, I thought it was a piece of dog poop and I put it in my bird cage, and that's fine. I'm okay with that because everyone has a right to their opinion.
I appreciate that. I appreciate that because most people don't say that.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm, you know what, I did it because it was on my bucket list of things to do before I die, and I said, I just have to have it out there. Whether or not it does great, I mean, you know, every writer hopes that their book does great, and I do. I continue to hope that it does great. But there's a reality to it, that there are some people that are not receptive or not caring for it, you know, so they may not like it, and that's fine. I'm okay with that.
What's happening with this house right now? I assume it's still standing?
It is still standing, and that is a question that, you know, people want the house number. I can't give the house number because there are new homeowners that I've tried to contact, and they, right now at least that I know of, they don't want anything to do with it because it would be bad publicity. Or if they try to resell it, I can understand because they'd have to list it as such, because that is a real estate rule that a lot of people joke.
Yep.
They, you know, you have to list if a house is haunted. And, you know, I'm happy for them if nothing's ever happened to them for whatever reason. Do I believe them if they say that? I would have to say I don't believe them. I'd have to say something must have happened along the way, but don't know. Would I love to get back into that house with my team of investigators right now and do an overnight investigation? I would absolutely love to do that. Am I crazy? Probably, for doing that, but it's something that it's like going home and finding out.
No, and I really do appreciate that you're being respectful for the new homeowners, because it's not the first time I've heard of people doing this. A lot of people, when they get out of a house that they grew up in and it had activity in it, and a new family's in there, they don't, you know, and they start sharing these stories with people, or if they have a ghost hunting team that they start and they start sharing these stories, they basically leave that family alone.
Yeah.
They don't try to get back in their lives and say, hey, you know, I grew up in this house when I was a kid. There are ghosts here. Is it cool if I come back and check it out? Because two things could happen. One, they could say, no, nothing's happening here, and they might be honest with you.
Right.
Or two, sometimes activity will sort of die down, and then you mention it, and then they start to think about it.
And then when things start happening. It's all energy, and I think that, like a lot of, and I was discussing this with someone, I believe last night I was having this discussion with someone. I said, you know, I was thinking about you and your situation in your home, that they were sharing some incidences, and they had asked me, they said, how come you didn't bring it up? I said, well, because I believe that if you are actually having these things go on and we discuss it, it's kind of like you're inviting it back to the tea party. So if you hadn't had anything go on, I think that's a positive thing. But unfortunately, they reached out to me because some things were still occurring. So we're in the middle of trying to figure that one out for them to see what's going on. There's a couple of things that we're going to be working on, so hopefully we'll be able to resolve that shortly.
Are you going to be writing any more books?
Oh, absolutely. I started the second one, and it's actually, it follows, you know, what happened to me after I grew up and different investigations and different other experiences that I've encountered that I'd like to get out there and share. And also I'd be sharing other stories of people that I know, or if anyone wants to come forth and share their stories, I'd be happy to include those in the book as well. So that book two is definitely underway, so I'm happy to say. So once I got this baby out, it was like giving birth. It literally was. It was so like long and coming, and it was just like, oh, you know. But now that it's done, it's like I'm ready to have another one, so.
And one more question for you. I'll try to make this quick since we're down to just the last couple minutes of the show. And since Sam's being so darn quiet. You hear that? He's quiet. Are you sleeping?
Come on, Sam, no. would it help you, Sam, to know that my grandmother, my father's mother, was born in England?
No, not at all.
Maybe you'd take a liking to me.
Sam's probably just really tired. He doesn't sleep a lot.
Aww.
Yeah, poor Sam. He's bad at bedtime.
Dungeons and Dragons, no?
All right, last question for you. What was the last thing that happened before you left that house?
Okay, it was, now I know you're not going to know what this is because you're a grown man, and I don't know how young of a man you are, so you may not remember, but maybe one of your sisters or relatives. Holly Hobby was this, like how they have Hello Kitty, they had Holly Hobby. It was like this little patch print girl, whatever, and I had everything, all of her toys, and my brother and gives me like a cutout of a little clubhouse. It was cardboard box, basically with like painted designs of Holly Hobby. And I would sit in there and like pretend whatever. It was like my little clubhouse. And my mother and I were sitting in the living room, and we saw one of those cardboard wrapping paper tubes come through the window. So we thought my brother was in there kind of playing around with us. And the thing just kept, you know, wriggling around, and then it just kind of shot out at us. You know, obviously it didn't hurt us, but it was like, oh, you know, we jumped. And my brother walked out of his bedroom behind us. So you can imagine, it was like, you know, we left a nice little streak of stuff on the floor. It was like, oh, okay. It wasn't anyone that was in there. It was just kind of playing with us, entertaining us. So that was one of the last things that did happen in the home, that it was like, what the hell? You know, it went anywhere from being like evil to loud to just being like, no, this is me, you know. You know, jazz hands, no.
Sam, would you run?
I'm sorry, what?
Would you have run?
Probably.
Yeah. Sam's not a fraidy cat or anything like that, but Sam's just waiting for one of those really awesome first-hand experiences that sends a chill down his spine and liquid down the leg of his pants.
Oh, yeah.
And don't forget about the costume.
That's right, yeah, let's not forget about the castle.
I work with a lot of investigators that some have had a lot of experiences, and we have some that are still waiting for their first experience, and that's why they investigate, because they still haven't had their experience. So don't worry, your time is coming.
Well, I'm open to, like, at my first experience with a proper investigator, like Steven and stuff like that. So, that should be pretty cool.
And scary, Sam. Don't forget scary.
Yeah.
Since we're down to the last couple minutes, Don, do you want to tell everybody again how they can get a hold of you for that book?
Sure, absolutely. They can go actually onto my Facebook page, Donna Parrish Bischoff, or Facebook page, The Lee Avenue Haunting. If they have a Kindle, they can go to Amazon.com and they can either get a paperback book of it, or they can pick it up on Kindle. And I'm working with Barnes & Noble right now to see if they may be carrying it shortly, so that'll be a good thing as well.
Excellent, excellent. I cannot freaking believe we're out of time already. What is going on here?
I know. I mean, it goes by so quickly, but I had a great time. Thank you.
Thank you so much for sharing these amazing stories with us, and I will definitely be getting a copy of the book. Sam, you have got to get people to buy as many copies of this book as you can. I'm counting on you.
I'll get one and I'll
Do not let me down. I know where you live. You're kind of far from me, but I still know
where
you live.
Sam, I'm going to come across the pond and get you.
That's right. Donna, thank you so
much. I'll post.
Donna, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you. Have a great weekend.
You too, Donna. Fantastic guest. Always a pleasure to have Donna on. Guys, we are out of time, down to the last minute here. The Lee Avenue Haunting is the title of the book. Pick up a copy on Amazon. Again, you can go to her Facebook page. You can find it on Kindle if you've got a Kindle. I don't own one, but I understand they're really cool. It's like this computer thing that holds a book, as many books as you want. I mean, how cool is that? Although I kind of miss the idea of turning pages. It's just me. Oh, God. Where does the night go? Where does the night go? I hope all of you guys had a fantastic time, because you know what? I know I sure as heck did. Until next time, guys, everyone take care. Be safe. Try not to kill each other out there, okay? And hey, above all, stay scared.